you know, I've been involved through multiple ventures. With that comes lessons. And the lessons are what I want to be bringing back to our students, right? Understanding what not to do is just as important as being, you know, tenacious and looking to solve this bigger problem. So it's extremely rewarding because ultimately in the field that we're in, it's connecting with patients and trying to help them. That's ultimately what we want to do, is we want to give back to the community.
I'm Mai Frank, and you're listening to This is Lausanne, a podcast all about amplifying the voices of incredible changemakers across the Lausanne community. Today, we are pleased to introduce Dr. Terry Saklos, an assistant professor in Lausanne's Department of Mechanical Engineering and the associate director of the Bergeron Entrepreneurs of Science and Technology program at Lausanne. In this interview, we delve deep into the exciting fields of stem cell engineering, regenerative medicine, research, and entrepreneurship. Hi, Dr. Saklos. Thank you so much for joining us today on This is Lausanne.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Let's jump right into it. Could you share with our listeners the fascinating trajectory of your academic journey, beginning with your attainment of a doctorate in tissue engineering and 3D printing from the esteemed University of Oxford, leading up to your current position as an assistant professor within the Department of Mechanical Engineering at Lausanne?
Yeah, it's been quite the journey. I've been very fortunate. I was accepted to do my PhD at the University of Oxford. I was supported through a scholarship through the Bodasaiki Foundation in the university, and that's where it really opened up my eyes and you know, the wonder of science. And so we were working on 3D printing, and specifically we're trying to make bone tissue. Bone is the second most transplanted tissue. When bones break and they connect them together again, there's little bits of bones that are missing, right? And so we were interested in figuring out a way that we could create custom implants, because the benefit of using 3D printing is you can connect it to something like a CT scan where you can actually get the patient's anatomy. And so we were trying to see how we could create these customized implants. The real value of the research we're doing is actually growing the blood vessels. So we're using a 3D printer, we could create the blood vessels, which are important to feed the bone. So it was a very productive PhD. We published well. We patented. We even set up a startup company. So it was a great educational experience. After that, wrapping up, I then went on to do my first postdoc. I had a postdoc shared between Harvard and MIT, between labs there. And that was my first experience with embryonic stem cells and getting to know and to work with them. And then as life comes, my now wife is Canadian, and so had to make a move to Canada, which is where I did a second postdoc in McMaster University. And that again was, you know, diving into the depths of stem cell biology, very rewarding. And we published very, very well. We published in a top tier journal called Cell. And I found myself, you know, part of this journey getting at a crossroad. Do I stick with academia, or do I try something which is very, you know, passionate to me, is entrepreneurship. So I gave it a try, and we actually went for a year to Silicon Valley, and we did a startup company there, part of Y Combinator. Very much enjoyed it, but I did realize that my heart is with science. And so I wanted to get back into academia, which is where I landed up here at Lausanne, the Department of Mechanical Engineering.
And where did the initial passion for stem cell research stem from?
That's a great question. When I started this field, I got excited about a related field called tissue engineering. And I remember at the time there was, on the news, there was some coverage about what was called the Vacanti mouse. If you don't know, Google it. But it's basically a mouse, which is an experimental mouse, it has no hair on it, but it actually had a human ear that was surgically implanted on the back. And I was captivated at what this was, and it was a proof of principle that we could actually grow human tissue, we could engineer it in the lab. And so the mouse was just a vehicle to receive it and see that the cells could grow. So my passion sparked through tissue engineering. But then as I got into the field, there was other field growing where that was stem cell biology and the area called regenerative medicine, and they kind of merged together. And so I started doing my PhD research in tissue engineering, and then I moved into stem cells because ultimately we want to be growing stem cells in these 3D engineering constructs to replace human tissue, right, as an alternative to organ transplants. So it was a science that which I always enjoyed doing, which guided me to, you know, ultimately working in stem cells as what my lab is now doing.
That's very interesting. I like the example of the mouse with the ear. I didn't even know that's a thing.
No, it's when you see it, it's a bit freakish, But it was a proof of principle study, and it really opened the doors and, you know, captivated, you know, including myself, the imagination of the public.
Was the ear functional?
No, it wasn't. Okay. And so it was designed as a way to see, can we grow cells? And it was never implanted into patients, but it was designed for patients who actually are missing an earlobe as a living replacement.
Interesting. Well, switching gears a little bit, you are the first principal investigator at Lausanne to receive a grant from CIHR, which is the Canadian Institute of Health Research, to support your research related to bone marrow transplants. This is a noteworthy achievement in the realm of research and innovation. I am curious, in simple terms, what is your research all about?
Boy, asking a scientist in simple terms, that's a loaded question. But I'm first of all, I'm very grateful to CHR for the funding. And we are a new school. Lausanne is only 11 years old. And so it's amazing to see the progress that we've made. I'm sure my grant is the first of many more that are going to come. I'm also grateful to NSERC for their funding. And so in simple terms, what we do is we actually work with stem cells that you have in your body. They're called hematopoietic or blood forming. So they're the stem cells that exist in your bone marrow. So the soft squidgy stuff that you have in your bones is the home of the blood forming stem cell. And these are clinically relevant stem cells. They're used in things like bone marrow transplants for patients who have leukemia or multiple myeloma. And so even though these cells have this incredible regenerative capacity, right, where, you know, from the early stages of fetal development to the time someone dies, they are constantly creating blood. And so they are able to, you know, generate lots of this blood. But as soon as we take these cells out of the body and we put them in a petri dish, they have about 24 to 72 hours of life. They effectively die. So we don't have good ways to grow them in a dish. So my research is really focused on how we can keep them alive a little bit longer. If we can keep them alive a little bit longer in a dish, then we can understand what's the science, what makes them tick, and maybe we can even manipulate them so we can make more of these clinically relevant cells. Maybe we can even find some new drugs. And so what we really work on is trying to recreate the bone marrow conditions in a petri dish. Right? And in its simplest form, if we think about the stem cells in the bone marrow, they live in this very comfortable house, you know, with a roof, and they have Wi-Fi because they're always communicating. They're very social. But when we take them out and we can source them, we can take them out by having a bone marrow aspirate, or we can actually use what's called mobilized peripheral blood, which is you give a drug to a patient and the stem cells go in the blood, and then we can just collect them from the blood. Or now we're actually taking blood from umbilical cord. So these stem cells are very powerful and they can be used therapeutically. But as I said, we can't grow them because when we yank them out, we put them in a petri dish, and it's effectively like putting them in a desert. So being from a very comfortable home to now putting them in the desert. And then what we're trying to do is build that home effectively in the petri dish so that they can then grow and study them. The lab also works with what happens in the disease state. So these blood stem cells can get mutated, and then they can then turn into leukemia. So we have healthy patient samples, and we also have leukemia patient samples. And the same thing is true. We can grow the leukemia in a dish, even though they grow quite excessively in patients. As soon as we take them out, they start to die. So in simple terms, what we do is we really want to keep cells alive a little bit longer in a dish so that we can actually understand what is happening scientifically, and then find new clinical applications, perhaps grow more stem cells for clinical use. And for leukemia, we can maybe test some new drugs to find new leukemia drugs.
And how exactly do you make them feel like they're in a home?
So the cells in the bone marrow, actually, they're surrounded by lots of other support cells. There's blood vessels there, there's bone cells, there's lots of communication, soluble factors and proteins that are communicating. But there's also a structural matrix. So we work very much in engineering that structural matrix. It's predominantly based on collagen. That's a protein. And what we do is we recreate these matrices to figure out which one is the best one. And we've had some success in actually identifying conditions that can keep stem cells alive, the blood stem cells alive for longer. So the home is very much a protein home and trying to recreate that natural environment that they have in the bone.
And could you tell us about a hypothetical person who might benefit from your research and how it could positively affect their life?
Absolutely. So You know, the patients that are undergoing bone marrow transplants or hematopoietic stem cell transplants is mostly leukemia patients and multiple myeloma patients. A number of other conditions, including autoimmune disease, are now being treated. There's about approximately 80,000 procedures annually globally that happen for these bone marrow transplants. And so it's a high-risk procedure, though, because a bone marrow transplant involves patients undergoing high-dose chemotherapy to basically kill off their bone marrow and kill off the blood system. And in doing that, you also hope to kill off the leukemia or the myeloma. And so what we're trying to do is make it a little bit of a safer procedure, because if we can understand how we can grow these in a dish, we can actually make more of these blood stem cells. And the procedure involves injecting these stem cells, you know, more of them and higher quality of them back to the patient so that it becomes safer in accepting the transplant. Right now, anywhere between 10 to 30% of patients die within the first 100 days. So it's quite a high-risk procedure. And ultimately, we want to make it safer by providing more stem cells for them to recover faster from this procedure.
And has your research been applied yet to patients?
We work with clinically relevant samples. So everything we do is in collaboration with Princess Margaret Hospital, where we get our leukemia patient samples and the Canadian Blood Services. And ultimately, we're working with patient samples. The reality is a newly diagnosed leukemia patient today won't be benefiting from our work because we're still in the early stages of development. But we do hope in the future that, you know, everything we're doing is clinically minded, that we'll be able to apply it to benefit patients.
Well, I also read that your research aligns with the UN Sustainable Development Goal 3, good health and well-being. In what ways do you envision your work contributing to a global health outcomes and advancements in the field?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, we're working specifically with bone marrow transplants, and by making them safer, we hope to increase access to these curative and life-saving procedures. I mentioned about leukemia and myeloma patients, but really now there's a new group of patients which include autoimmune diseases, such as multiple sclerosis. And those patients have a dilemma to face in that the procedure is a high-risk procedure. But if we can make it a lower-risk procedure for them, maybe we can increase access to these autoimmune diseases. And you know, right now, I think the data showing it's viable for multiple sclerosis, but there's many more other autoimmune diseases out there. And so if we can make it a safer procedure, then I think increasing access to, you know, these lifelong conditions, you know, we ultimately have something that's curative, but we have to make it safer.
So it would be a more guaranteed cure, like your research?
Yes. So when we talk about blood-forming stem cells, these hematopoietic cells are responsible for creating the red blood cells, your white blood cells, and your platelets. So it's the white blood cells that are in your immune system, right? And some of those immune cells, for different reasons, they may react with the patient's own cells. And in the case of multiple sclerosis, it reacts with parts of the nerve cell. A bone marrow transplant effectively wipes out the immune system, right? And what you try to do is to reset it now with a new stem cell that can regrow the immune system. So you're kind of retraining, you're growing it and retraining it. And so in a way it can be curative, and the data has been very promising for MS. But as I said, it's a high risk procedure because MS patients do have alternative treatments. But what those treatments do is ultimately there can be a deterioration in a long-term condition. And once damage happens to the nerves, it becomes irreparable. So we need to intervene before the damage happens. But we have to make it a safer procedure first. So that dilemma of, you know, is an easier one to convince patients that it's the right option for them.
Well, you mentioned that it's still in the early stages mm-hmm. of development. How long do you think it'll take before it is applied?
So we're ultimately part of a much larger community, right? And there are folks that are doing some beautiful work in, really the University of Ottawa is leading the MS clinical trials. We're really focusing on improving the bone marrow transplants. And then through collaborations, ultimately, we're looking to team up with folks who work in that space. And so I think that's the beauty of science, is working in this community. So we're contributing towards that goal, right? Timing-wise, the trials have already happened, and they seem to be positive in that respect. And I think the word is now getting out that it's becoming more of an option for patients. But it's before becoming mainstream, it has to become a safer procedure.
Right.
I think that's where we're focusing our expertise.
Well, thanks for sharing more about your research. It sounds very promising. Switching gears here, in addition to being a professor, you are also the associate director of the BEST program. Could you share with us the vision and goals of this entrepreneurship program?
Absolutely. So the Bergeron Entrepreneurs in Science and Technology program is the in-house program at the Lausanne School of Engineering for Entrepreneurship. And we very much want to be helping our students to develop an entrepreneurial mindset within their academic careers, because we think that those are critical skills for them to, you know, ultimately, you know, selling their ideas and trying to change the world, whether it's through doing a startup and developing technology that can help solve a bigger problem, or even through like an intro where they can, within the company that they're working for, right, they ultimately got to promote their ideas. And so we have a close relationship with the business school and the law school, and we try to give students that skill set of business skills, relevant law skills, in addition to obviously what they get during their engineering and computer science degrees, which is focusing on technology. So we try to enhance their curriculum by thinking about entrepreneurship and the benefits that come with promoting their ideas and, you know, solving things creatively, but making someone listen and understand on how important these things are.
And how does BEST empower students to bridge the gap between science, technology, and entrepreneurship?
No, it's a great question. So one of the first things that we set up was an undergraduate certificate that's embedded within the curriculum of the engineering computer science programs. And so students meet certain milestones and develop their skills during their degree. But in addition, they also have to take four courses. Three of them are at the business school, which are focused on entrepreneurship specifically for engineering computer science students. And the fourth one is at the law school, which focuses on developing expertise in intellectual property. And so students can take these courses and ultimately get a certificate at the end of their program in entrepreneurship, the BEST certificate. In addition, we have an in-house space of the physical, what we call the BEST Labs physical space, where students can have desks and we help them with access to resources, 3D printing, laser cutting, the machine shop. And these are students who actually are thinking about building some kind of a prototype and commercializing the prototype. So we give them the access to these resources so they can then create their startups. We hope to create also community, which connects them so they can find co-founders. And we work closely with our partners at Schulich and Osgood too, so we can team them up with other like-minded students to create their teams. And the last thing that we have is a new project that we've launched that we call the BEST Bridge to Startup Program that's designed for the Capstone project. Capstone, if you're not familiar, is the final year engineering project that students have. It's a team of engineers come together and they solve a problem. They usually develop some kind of a prototype. What we've done is we've created a program which funds students for 4 months after their capstone, which is usually when they're about to graduate. So after capstone, to take that prototype and actually think about how they could commercialize it. So we're investing in the students over a period of time. And that's been a very exciting program because, you know, we're actually seeing our students taking their prototypes now and making products out of them.
Right. Well, that's amazing. With that, though, can come some obstacles. And I find that the focus on societal challenges is intriguing. Can you give us some examples of the types of challenges that students have tackled through the BEST program and the innovative solutions they've come up with?
Absolutely. And that's a good, you know, you raise a good point. I think part of the job that we have as educators and working in entrepreneurship is listening to our students, some of the ideas that they come up with. And, you know, some of the lesson is actually saying no to them. I think that's a bad idea. So I've seen far too many pizza apps. Everyone wants to be creating a new pizza app to be, you know, helping students on campus, which is wonderful, but there are bigger problems to solve. And so I think what we at Lausanne do very well is we think about what are the bigger problems so that students can be more, think about solving them, right, and using technology. And that's kind of something that we also reinforce within the BEST program, is what's the bigger problem? What's the bigger impact that you're going to make? And so an example that I can think of is a group of students. One of them was from the engineering program. Another one was from the business school. And they were working in the BEST lab together. And the engineer built this new type of drone. It's inherently more stable to fly and create this much larger size drone, very stable. The problem was, what's the business opportunity? And so it was nice to see how they were considering different ventures, you know, everything from cinematography. But ultimately, where they landed up was using this drone and mounting an ultrasonic sensor on there so they could detect corrosion on pipelines. Because pipelines are in remote places, they can be elevated, and it's very hard to measure these things, and sometimes it's not safe for people that physically have to climb up. And yet a drone can get up there and do the same work now. And so seeing the development of that company from, you know, students to now what is a profitable company that's been funded and is making sales, it's been an incredible journey. And hopefully, you know, the impact is that there's no, you know, they can prevent, you know, an oil spill, right? Because they can detect the corrosion before it becomes dangerous.
Right. Well, I definitely think that all the challenges that, you know, students can face definitely redirects them ultimately to success. In addition to helping students follow their entrepreneurial dreams, you're also an entrepreneur yourself, mm-hmm. co-founding several startup companies. Could you share some insights into the challenges and rewards of being a serial academic entrepreneur?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely been a very rewarding experience. Everything from my PhD, when I was involved in setting up a university spin-out company. And I think working in science, we very much focus on understanding the science and publishing the science so that the scientific community, we increase the body of knowledge, we disseminate the new knowledge that gets created. But taking that the next step, especially in, you know, an area which I work in, which is clinical translation, right, is trying to get it into, you know, helping patients, that itself is very rewarding. And so commercialization is that vehicle which allows us to take our lab research and move it into the clinical setting. And so, you know, I've been involved through multiple ventures. With that comes lessons. And the lessons are what I want to be bringing back to our students, right? Understanding what not to do is just as important as being, you know, tenacious and looking to solve this bigger problem. So it's extremely rewarding. Because ultimately, in the field that we're in, it's connecting with patients and trying to help them. That's ultimately what we want to do, is we want to give back to the community. And that's why I urge all faculty members to really think about how do we commercialize our research.
Well, speaking of academia, in addition to your astounding work with undergraduate students, you've also developed a new graduate course in disruptive and exponential technologies. What inspired you to merge engineering and business administration students in this course?
Yes, I think that it came from what I saw with that example I gave, where there was an engineering student and a business student that came together, and that's where the magic happened, right? And so they complement each other in many ways, where you have engineering students developing technology, right, and focusing on technology entrepreneurship, using technology to solve a bigger problem. But building a team, having business students too that can help in, you know, understanding how do you commercialize, what is the business opportunity, right? And what do you need to improve on the project? Is there any more technology that needs to be added? That happens when you put the right people together in a room. And so connecting people is critical. And that's why that was really the thought process behind that course on disruptive technology, where we get them to understand the importance of technology and how it can be disruptive, but use it in a positive way, but also merging these different groups together and realizing that they can work together to do some incredible, you know, new ventures.
And what have you found as an outcome of this course so far?
Well, we're at the heart of it, we're educators. And so it's a rewarding educational experience, seeing students connecting. And to me, the outcome has always been the feedback that I get back from the students saying that it's like one of the best courses I've had. Because ultimately, you know, what we have is a microcosm of what, when they get into industry, we will have engineers working with business managers. And so it's getting them that exposure early on, which I think is the rewarding component, right? And then if they can set up startups, why not?
Well, for your final question today, with your experience as an academic entrepreneur, what advice do you have for aspiring researchers who wish to use their scientific discoveries into real-world applications and businesses?
Well, my advice is always focus on what you're good at. And so if you're good at the research, focus on the research, but also understand that there's help out there. So universities offer technology transfer offices, which it's a place to go to and get help, right? If you're willing and you want to be part of this commercialization, then you can connect with folks. The ecosystem has grown now to the point where it's easy to get help and advice on what to do. And so I think always remembering what you're particularly good at, what makes you happy, right, is important. because entrepreneurship is a rewarding path. But if you enjoy doing the science, continue doing the science and work with people, right? Whether they're business people who can help take your research to the next level. And I think it's important that people continue to do what makes them happy. But at the same time, we need to get our research out of the lab. And so, you know, connecting with the tech transfer offices is a critical message. The best program is always available to help for folks at LaSalle. And just chatting and communicating, I think, is key.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your words of wisdom. That's all the questions we have for you today. You're a true inspiration, and we appreciate everything you have done and continue to do for the LaSalle community.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. Thank you so much.
I learned so much about entrepreneurship and the growing field of stem cell research. I hope you did too. See you next time on This is LaSalle.